I'm Phyllis Brandt. We're going to be talking tonight about the difference between caretaking and nurturing, or as I titled it, the subtle trap of caretaking. Trust me, we'll get to that. I'd like to start, though, by commenting about some of the helpful things that people have come up and talked to me about between the sessions. There's been some pushing and prodding, which is what I think part of Holden offers for us, is for all of us to do some thinking. And that's particularly around the question that people have been asking me is, how does this fit in with spirituality? How does what I'm saying about looking at your inner self, nurturing the person that you are, how does that fit in with spirituality? And I'll admit that I've had to scratch my head on that one. I think I could articulate quite a bit about that. But I feel that in some ways, I'm going to let you use your creativity and your own sense of what your spirituality is and your own struggle with that and see how that meshes with what I'm saying rather than for me to say it. I see my role instead as one of presenting some things for your awareness, some things for you to chew on and work with. And rather than answer that question for you, I'm going to leave that hanging. But I do want you to continue to talk with me outside about that, because I'm very willing to do that. And I'm finding what you're doing for me is very helpful. When I talk about awareness, it brings to mind this quote that I would like for you to just to address for a second. One achieves mental health to the extent that one becomes aware of one's interpersonal relationships. What I hope we're doing tonight is to bring some awareness, some consciousness, some new way of looking at it, that will be what you walk out with. Another quote, we have two lives to live, the one where we learn and the one after that which we live. Let you think about that. Okay. Tonight we're going to be talking about Swiss cheese people. And we're going to be talking about the difference between caretaking and nurturing. I thought it was kind of hilarious that we had Swiss cheese today for lunch. And I will explain what I mean by Swiss cheese. It's a process of growing and a process of learning and a process of maybe not getting what we want. I'd like you to go back to, let's say we're going to go back to the 1940s. And on one day in the 1940s, there are two children born. And let's just say this is the potential that these two children have at birth. Now, they may have differing personality characteristics in terms of genetics. They may have temperaments that are varying, talents, abilities that are different. But each of those two children at birth have the potential for wholeness, for completeness, for a satisfying life at that moment. However, what happens to each of those two children can be very different. And that's what I would like to contrast with you. I have two people that have offered to help me. Well, I talked them into it, really. They are going to be reading for you the difference between the environment that these two children grow up in. Jim is going to be family one, and Yvonne is going to be family two. And let me tell you about these two families. Family one has parents who are emotionally mature. They have ways of meeting their own needs, their own physical needs, spiritual, mental. And so they come to parenting with a gift of life, of joy, of growth for this child that's born on that day in 1940. In family two, the situation is a little different. And I want you to know I am drawing very strong contrasts. And I'm doing extremes. And I'm doing that on purpose because it's easier to show what happens when I do that. So family two has an extremely different situation than family one. In family two, the mother in the family has a lot of recurring depression. There are times when things go okay for her and she's able to handle raising a child, but there are times when her depression takes over and the needs of the child are subjugated or put in a second place. The father in the family is a very successful doctor. Let's even make him an obstetrician, so he's gone really a lot of the time. Completely out of control in terms of when he can plan his time because he's called out. He's a workaholic. He's very interested in being well-known in the community and doing well. And his emphasis is outside the home in his career. And he tends to even encourage that kind of behavior. And so he's not involved. Remember, this is the 40s. And he's not involved in raising this child to any extent. Well, these two children, like all of us and like all of our children, go through predictable stages of development. And I have these up here. I don't know if you can see them very well. But there are stages that, although each child and each of us had our own rate of growth and our own pace of growth, there are predictable stages that we all go through. The stages are marked with time, but that's really a very, very general, and it's just an approximation, because any child will be in their own pace. But the stages are what is important for that child to address at that time in their life. The first one is being. Second is doing. The third stage is thinking. Fourth is identity and power. The next stage is structure. The adolescent stage, identity, sexuality, and separation. And then the adult stage of interdependence. Okay, so what I want you to experience is listening to the messages, and in the first family, we're going to call them affirmations. You may be familiar with affirmations, but in this specific scenario, I want you to think of them as encouragement, permission, approval to grow, and help and structure in growing. In the second family, instead of affirmations, you will be hearing diminishing messages. Messages that don't let the child grow and complete what the growth stage of that particular time is. Okay. The first stage is somewhere from birth to 6 months. And what the child needs to address at that stage is it okay for me to be here, to make my needs known, and to be cared for? Okay, listen to family one.
I'm glad you are alive. You belong here. What you need is important to me. You can feel all your feelings. I love and care for you willingly.
This child is being filled up. Their inner sense of who they are has begun to be developed by these affirmations. And so I have filled in this part. This is going to be how I visualize what happens. And if it doesn't work for you, I'm sorry, but this is how I can see this concept happening. So this stage, this potential of this stage has happened. That child has been able to move through that stage and get what they need, and they're ready for the next stage. Now let's listen to family two. What happens in that family?
I feel powerless and helpless, so I can't take care of your needs very well. I hurt when you cry, and it makes me feel sadder, and I can't do anything. I am lonely in parenting because your father is not involved.
Okay. This child was not able to complete that stage. Instead of warm, filled-up messages, this child got what I call donuts. They got messages, but they weren't full messages. They were conditional kinds of love, and they were inadequate for the child to be able to fully develop. So instead of a straight line, this child has a gap here, some unfinished development. Stage two, the child is looking at, is it safe for me to explore and try new things and to trust what I learn? Okay, let's hear family one.
You can explore and experiment, and I will support and protect you. You can be interested in everything. I like to watch you initiate and grow and learn.
More filled up.
I love you when you are active and when you are quiet.
Permission, acceptance, love, and help in growing. Okay, family two.
Please don't get into things. It makes such a mess, and I hate cleaning it up. I love you when you are quiet and not making demands on me. I worry about you growing away from me.
More donuts, more conditional messages, and once more, a gap in development. Stage three. The child is working on, is it okay for me to learn to think for myself? Family one.
I'm glad that you're starting to think for yourself. It's okay to be angry, and I won't let you hurt yourself or others. You can become separate from me, and I will continue to love you.
Family two.
In this family, there's only one way to think about things. Don't be angry. I want you to stay right by me.
Another gap in the development. Rather than wholeness, we're starting to see Swiss cheese forming. The next stage, the child is looking at, is it okay for me to be who I am with my unique abilities? Is it okay for me to find out who others are and learn the consequences of my behavior? Family one.
You can explore who you are and find out who other people are. You can be powerful and also ask for help. All of your feelings are okay with me. I love who you are.
Family two.
I want you to be a child I can be proud of. Stay away from other people because you might get hurt by them. Stay close to me. I love you when you are how I want you to be.
In the next stage, the child is working on, how do I develop the competence to master the technical and social skills I need to live in my culture? Okay, family one.
You can trust your intuition to help you. You can learn how and when to disagree. You can ask for help. I love you even when we differ.
And family too?
I will tell you what to do. You don't have to think for yourself. Be how I want you to be, and then I will love you. Don't disagree with me. Don't trust your own feelings.
And the next stage. This is the adolescent stage. How do I become a separate person with my own values and still belong? Is it okay for me to be independent, to honor my sexuality, and to be responsible? Family one.
You can know who you are and develop your own interests, relationships, and causes. You can grow in your femaleness and maleness. You can still be dependent at times. My love is always with you. I trust you to ask.
Two.
Stay a little child. Your growing up as a sexual being is very threatening to me. Don't become interdependent. Be the person I want you to be. Don't think for yourself. I can't handle you leaving me.
Do you see the Swiss cheese? What we have here are gaps in development. We have uneven parenting. We have holes in the way this person is put together as a person. What happens then for this person who doesn't have everything they need given to them is that they are very vulnerable to becoming a caretaker. A caretaker, a person who doesn't have their emotional needs met, has somebody else as their reference, rather than having an internal referent, which means I feel full, I feel competent, I can ask for help, I feel loved and I feel appreciated for who I am, not for what I do. This person has an internal referent. They are strong on the inside, they have a sense of wholeness, they have a sense of who they are, and they have a sense that who they are is appreciated. Not that everybody's going to love them, not that everybody's going to agree with them, but they can handle it and they can ask for help when they need it. This person is going to be looking for somebody to help fill up those holes. It's uncomfortable to be a Swiss cheese person. The wind kind of blows through on some days. And there are gaps there. And this person's not going to be real comfortable with people seeing their undeveloped and incomplete parts. So what they do is they build defenses, little shields around those undeveloped parts so that people can't peer in and see what's on the inside. Because on the inside, this person feels a lot of loneliness, a lot of hurt, and a lot of anger. But on the outside, because of these defenses, they have a public self that may not show what's on the inside. Now, that public self could be a very competent, overachieving, almost driven person who is out to show how good they are. But it's coming from an inner depletion or an inner feeling of not being good enough. So these defenses are built around it, and when we talk later in the week about intimacy, we're going to see how that gets in the way of relating. So this person is wanting to be filled up, and the way that they approach that is to try to find other people to do that for them. This person then becomes a caretaker because this other person over here could be someone to help them. They may look for somebody. Now, it's most likely they're going to look for somebody who's needy, somebody that needs their help. So what they do is they reach out to that person, but what they want is for that person to come back and begin to fill in some of these holes and some of these donuts. That's a caretaker. This person is able to nurture. And for them to reach out to another person is a one-way street. They can give because they aren't coming from a needy position. They are already full, and they know how to stay full, or they know how to help themselves when they get to feeling spent. Now, I'm doing this in really extreme terms. Most of us have some Swiss cheese parts. In fact, I don't know anybody that's like this. I guess maybe I know somebody that's close, but it just doesn't happen. We don't have perfect parents, and by the way, we aren't perfect parents either. And I know when I first thought of this, I thought, oh no, what did I do to my kids? I mean, it's really, it can get to you when you think about it. But we're talking about awareness here. We're not talking about discounting ourselves. We're not talking about putting ourselves down. We're talking about awareness so that we can move out and we can do things and change. And the good news is that this doesn't have to stay that way. As adults, we can fill in those donuts. And by working at it, we can move out these undeveloped areas. Now, I'm not saying it's real easy, but it's possible to do that. It's possible to get to wholeness. And that's partly what awareness is about. It's starting with, what do I need to do? And I will recommend this book, and it's just come out, so I didn't get it to the bookstore here as a suggested book. But it's called Growing Up Again by Jean Clark. She's also written a book called Self-Esteem, a Family Affair that you may have seen. In this book, it suggests how to parent in the most concrete and the most comprehensive way that I've ever seen. The second value of this book, however, is that it talks about what to do for us who weren't parented completely, and the uneven parenting that we have, and maybe the stages that didn't work so well. If you're a parent, you probably are aware of the fact that there are certain times in your children's life when you do better. Like, some people are really baby people, and they just do such a good job of nurturing and caring and holding and cuddling when they're real little. And some people like the early elementary age, when the kids are out bustling and they're so excited about learning and they're learning how to ride their bikes, and that stage is a real good stage, a stage that works well for them. And then I don't know how many of us do too well during adolescence, but the point is that there are times when maybe we got what we needed because our parents did well at that stage, or maybe the circumstances in their life allowed it at that time. And there are times when maybe we didn't get all of what we needed. So let's get back to talking then about the caretaking and nurturing, as now that we understand what that means and what has led up to being a caretaker, so that we have an awareness of that. A caretaker looks for other people for validation, for approval, for being okay, for even validating what they're thinking. And here's a Snoopy cartoon that will illustrate how a Swiss cheese kind of person might not even realize, wouldn't be able to even say for themselves what they're feeling. This is kind of the wrong season of the year, but Snoopy's ice skating. And Lucy comes along, and Snoopy's having such a good time. He's out there ice skating, having such a good time. And Lucy says, "That's not skating, that's sliding. You don't have any skates on, you're just sliding on your feet. That's not skating. Skating is when you have skates on. You're not skating at all, you're just sliding." So he walks away from the icy pond thinking, "How could I have been so stupid? I thought I was having fun." Well, if anybody would know who's having fun, I think it would be the person who's having the fun. And that's an illustration of that idea that somebody else is telling us what to think, or telling and not even accepting that I could be, yes, I am skating, I don't care what she says. I'd like to give you some examples of what caretaking is, and we'll get into contrasting that with nurturing. An example by the way, this book is in the bookstore, Codependent No More. Codependent is a word for people who have difficulty in relating with other people because they tend to be caretakers. They tend to not validate who they are. And this is a really easy to read and a very clear book about that whole process of getting out of those tendencies. A caretaker, example. Now in her 40s, Marla is an attractive woman when she takes care of herself. Most of the time, however, she's busy taking care of her 5 children and her husband. She devoted her life to making them happy, but she didn't succeed. Usually she feels angry and unappreciated for her efforts, and her family feels angry at her. She has sex with her husband whenever he wants, regardless of how she feels. She spends too much of the family's budget on toys and clothing for the children, whatever they want. She chauffeurs, reads to, cooks for, cleans for, cuddles and coddles those around her, but nobody gives to her. Most of the time, they don't even say thank you. Marlis resents her constant giving to people in her life. She resents how her family and their needs control her life. She chose nursing as her profession, and she often resents that. "But I feel guilty when I don't do what's asked of me. I feel guilty when I don't live up to my standards for a wife and mother. I feel guilty when I don't live up to other people's standards for me. I just plain feel guilty," she said. "In fact, I schedule my day and my priorities according to guilt." Another example of a caretaker came up for me when a parent came in to talk to me about her daughter at my school. And she got off the track and was talking about how angry she was at her parents. Her parents are taking care of her 27-year-old brother, who is living in their home, is spending his money on drugs, and so he gives them no money for room and board, although he has a job. He got in a car wreck. They paid for having his car repaired. They pay for his car insurance. That's caretaking. Part of caretaking is also trying to control other people. Because if you want to look good for other people, to hide how you feel on the inside, it's going to be important for you to have everybody in your family look good and to do the kind of things that you would want them to make you look good. Well, I'm going to tell you a true confession story, and I'm not proud of it. But I fell into that trap. I have a son who just graduated from college, but when he was in high school, he had the ugliest shirt in the entire universe. Now, he's the kind of kid who doesn't own things, doesn't own a car, doesn't own a stereo. He gets donation clothes from friends or friends' brothers that are moving to California, and they have wool sweaters that they wouldn't be using. He fills in with clothes from Value Village, and that's only under duress. Now, I could really live with that, but he brought home this shirt from Value Village that was orange and yellow stripes, gigantic orange and yellow horizontal stripes. And orange is my unfavoritous color, but this shirt looks like it had already done its life's work by the time he'd picked it up, and it was all stretched out at the neck. And you know how cotton shirts look after they're ready to go to the rag bag. So he brought this shirt home. And it was okay, except that he wore it every chance he could get. And if I'd wash clothes in the middle of the week and he wore it on Monday, as soon as it was out of the wash, he'd wear it again on Thursday. So I had to keep looking at this awful shirt. Well, the worst part of it was he went to the high school that I used to work at and where I had a lot of friends that I cross-country skied with and hiked with and whatever. So every time he walked out the door, he was a freshman in high school, and every time he walked out the door, I knew that my friends were going to see him in this shirt. And I couldn't stand it. I just could not stand the sight of them, him in that shirt, and knowing that my friends were going to see that. Like I said, I'm not real proud of the story. Well, I decided that, you know how you can leave stuff at the bottom of the basket and say, full load, just didn't get it in. So I started doing that so that it wouldn't be rerun so often. And he said, well, where's my shirt? And I couldn't get it in the wash. Well, you know, you can't do that too long before he caught on that I wasn't washing the shirt. So you know what I did? I hid it. I hid it in a closet because I thought this shirt's like a habit. I mean, it's just like something he kind of has to wear, and if he breaks his habit, it's not going to be so important. Well, he asked me about the shirt, and I lied to him. And I told him I didn't know what had happened to it. And I knew from the look on his face that he knew I was lying. So I thought, ugh, this is getting beyond funny. So I took the shirt back out and ran it through the wash, and I didn't say anything about it, and he continued to wear it for that whole school year. But you know, I never felt really good about what I had done. And so last year he was a junior in college, and I wrote him a letter. And I said, "Dear Joel, this letter's probably going to come as a surprise, but I have something I want to apologize for." I said, "It was bad enough to lie to you about the shirt, the orange and yellow shirt." I wanted to make sure you knew what I meant. "To lie to you about the orange and yellow shirt. But what I really feel bad about was that I implied that you couldn't pick and be who you were, and that wasn't okay with me. And I really am sorry. Love, Mom." So he wrote back, "Dear Mom, well, yes, this did come as a surprise." He said, "In fact, I have totally forgotten about it." And he said, "You know, if that's the worst thing you ever did as a parent, you really did okay." Can you tell he's a psychology major? Made Mom feel good. Actually, I cried when I wrote the letter. I was really upset, recognizing later the controlling factor that I had had and how important, how stupid it really was, how he looked and how my friends would have thought of me, and it was really dumb. But that's caretaking. Okay, I'd like to contrast caretaking and nurturing, and then I want to get some comments from you. Nurturing is when we take care of others in a calm, loving, kind way. Caretaking is when we care for others because we'll feel guilty if we don't, or because it's the only way we know how to justify our existence or how to get people to love us. Nurturing allows other people their privacy and dignity. A nurturing person assumes that the person he or she is nurturing can take care of himself. There's no have to about nurturing. Caretakers are likely to sigh a lot as they describe how needy, desperate, and downright helpless the people they are taking care of would be without them. Nurturers usually surround themselves with people who can take care of themselves. They don't need other people to be dependent upon them in order to feel that they're worthwhile or important. Caretakers usually surround themselves with people who are emotionally helpless. Their self-esteem is tied up in other people being dependent upon them. Nurturers are compassionate about other people's problems. I'm sorry you're having a rough time right now. Caretakers take on other people's problems in order to feel important. I didn't sleep a wink last night worrying about you. Nurturers usually make a successful transition from mother to friend once their children are grown. Caretakers are the kind of mothers who still worry if their 45-year-old sons are eating right. Nurturers feel responsible for their own happiness and well-being. They know they can't make anyone happy or peaceful or safe. Caretakers assume, but sometimes without knowing it, that the person who needs their care is too fragile, immature, unbalanced, unaware, uninformed to be responsible for his or her own happiness, safety, and well-being. Nurturers don't keep themselves feeling safe by trying to control other people's thoughts, feelings, or their behavior. They keep themselves safe by listening to what they need and figuring out decent and clean ways to get those needs met. What I'd like for you to grapple with a little bit in terms of caretaking and nurturing is, what areas of your life do you feel you might have more trouble with drawing that line? One of those areas could be with your children. Caretakers would do things for children that they can do for themselves, which doesn't allow them mastery and a sense of competence. Another area might be your parents or extended family. For example, giving advice and then they don't take it. You have such good ideas. And how do you feel if they don't take your advice? That's the second area. And I'll put these on the board because I want you to work in groups and discuss some of these with each other. Another area would be work. Making yourself indispensable at work is a caretaking attitude in the sense of wanting approval, and you probably won't get it. You'll probably get burnout instead. But is that an area for you that might be a difficult caretaking position, difficult to sort out? And the fourth would be your church, your community, your friendships, a little bit broader aspects of our life. For example, do you feel you need to be needed, and then when people don't want, your friends don't want your help, then that's a problem for you. I'm going to put all four of those on the board. What I'd like you to do is, again, before, meet in groups of five or four or convenient little groupings, and I want you to share with each other or explore the differences so that you're clear, and also maybe identify some areas that you can work on to balance out the nurturing side of you rather than the caretaking. Are there questions before we start that?
Yeah. Can you say what you said about the work area again?
Caretakers in a work area may make themselves indispensable. Like in our school, there's a teacher that volunteers on every single committee that comes up. And she does have a lot of good ideas, and she really has a lot to contribute, but she can't stand the fact that that committee could go on without her. Or it may be in a work situation where the boss says, look, nobody's going to stay and do this project. Would you do it? And the person would just needs to go home and unwind and have some rest, but will still do it because they're afraid of not getting approval from the boss or not being seen in a positive light and standing up for themselves. So I'll put those four areas again on the board. Other questions?
Would you have a fifth category about spouse relationships?
That's a really good idea. Now, why didn't I think of that? Okay, I will do that. The areas again are your spouse or your marriage or partner, your children, your parents and extended family, your work situation, and then your community, church, friendship, a wider kind of circle. You're talking about what is the difference between caretaking and nurturing, and where do you find that you may need some clarification and some help? We'll have about 10 minutes for that time, and then we'll get back together. I think what I'd like to have you do is identify first yourself if you have problems in any area not being a caretaker and instead being a nurturer. Some people may have just one area that they have more difficulty than another, or there may be several. I don't want to do this at all. I want to stay with my group because I'm really enjoying the conversation, but I feel like I need to draw us to a close.
Good luck.
Yeah. You're welcome to stay with your group and talk more. I really want to stay with my group. I just really had a good discussion. As I said, I would like this to be awareness. This isn't the complete growth experience, and it's something you can keep working on, but really appreciate the members of my group and the things they shared about their process and learning not to be caretakers and the freedom, the lack of resentment and being tired and worn out that you get when you move to a nurturing role as opposed to caretaking. To conclude, what I'd like to do is read for you the last stage, which we didn't talk about, and that's the adult stage, and I'd like to read for you some affirmations. Listen to these, let them soak in, and let yourself experience being given this permission to grow and to enjoy your life in these ways as an adult. Your needs are important. You can be uniquely yourself and honor the uniqueness of others. You can be independent and interdependent. Through the years, you can expand your commitments to your own growth, to your family, your friends, your community, and to all humankind. You can build and examine your commitments to your values and causes, your roles, and your tasks. You can be responsible for your contributions to each of your commitments. You can be creative, competent, productive, and joyful. You can trust your inner wisdom. You can say your hellos and goodbyes to people, roles, dreams, and decisions. You can finish each part of your journey and look forward to the next. You are lovable at every age. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.